argument this morning is United States against Figueroa España. Mr. Grass.
I guess I don't have to tell you my name.
Now we get to my question. Did your client own the truck?
No. As far as I know, my client never owned that truck. I wish I could tell you who exactly owned the truck.
Well, my question is, how's he got it? What's his standing to beef about the search?
Okay, I think his standing comes from two sources. First of all, the search was tainted by the stop. It's the second stop of his person, which we contend was where the troopers jumped the shark, so to speak. So we think that because he obviously would have standing to contest the stop of his person, that would taint everything flowing subsequent from that, which would include the search.
So we don't really think factual finding as to whether or not did he. I mean, the pinch itself, if I recall, was for tailgating.
Yes, it was for tailgating.
And that's against the root law, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, where do we go from there? The judge accepted the fact that there was tailgating, and he got a warrant for it.
Well, Mr. Figueroa was actually stopped twice. So the first stop.
Then when he whistled and said amigo, that's the second stop.
Well, it is the second stop, Your Honor, because
it's not stopping a car. It's just pause there while you're walking away.
It's not a stop of the vehicle. Yeah. If it's a continuation
of
the original.
It never moves again.
Pardon me?
Once the vehicle was stopped, it never moved again.
Vehicle was stopped, it never moved again.
Okay.
Mr. Figueroa remained moving. Mr. Figueroa, believed he was returning to the vehicle and could leave. He had been told by the officers at that point, who had completed, the original purpose of the stop, had fulfilled their conclusion and had given him the ticket for tailgating. Now they've told him he can leave, and he takes a few steps away, and they don't whistle. What they actually do is they instigate a whoop of the siren, and they shout after him, amigo, ven aquí por favor, tengo más preguntas. Friend, come here, please. I have more questions. So at this point, having just once been told he could leave, he's now subject to a second order from the police, commanding him personally at that point to stop. So I don't think there's really any question here that there was a stop. Mr. Figueroa certainly at that point was not free to go about his business. Any reasonable person under those circumstances would understand with the cop there and the whoop of the siren and having the continued effect of the original stop that he was not free. So we think, first of all, that there is standing that continues from his challenge of the second stop. And we also think that there's standing. If we needed to independently involve standing from the search, we would have that too, because Mr. Figueroa was driving this vehicle, and drivers have a subjective expectation of privacy in the vehicles that they operate. And that's an expectation that society is prepared to accept as legitimate. And Mr. Figueroa, it's true. Now, the state has tried to argue that perhaps the vehicle was stolen because Mr. Figueroa was not the owner of the vehicle. Maybe he had stolen the vehicle. And it's true that there's case law that says that a driver of a stolen vehicle does not have standing in that vehicle. But under the same case, United States versus Garcia, it's clear that the state bears the burden of proving by preponderance of the evidence that the vehicle was indeed stolen. And if you look at Garcia, it's actually a case very similar to this with an alleged drug courier, and there was a secret compartment in the vehicle, and the individual disclaimed ownership of the vehicle. And what they said in that case was it was extremely unlikely that this was anything but a borrowed vehicle. Why would a drug courier happen to steal a vehicle that already had a secret compartment in it? I mean, it just didn't make sense in that case. So,
unless the courier's the original delivered, the guy who prepared it stole it, and then your driver was driving it.
Well,
that possibility exists too.
Possibility that it was.
But you asked how, and I just answered how.
Okay, so there. That's the interesting. I had not certainly thought of that. I don't think it's
stolen vehicles are frequently used in the transportation of drugs, aren't they?
They may well be, sir. But again, there's.
I know, but
the state would have that burden of proving.
They certainly would. They would. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much, Your Honor. Since I apparently have one way or another addressed the issue of whether there was a stop and whether there was standing, I guess the remaining issue on our first claim that the stop and search were improper, would be whether or not there was reasonable suspicion to support that second stop. Obviously, the standard for reasonable suspicion is an objective standard. Going by what the troopers knew at the time, they have to have articulable facts that disclose a possibility that there is a crime occurring, which would exclude the vast majority of innocent conduct. In this case, the officers or the troopers had four particular facts that they identified as making them suspicious. The first of those facts was that Mr. Figueroa was apparently very nervous and very hesitant to answer the questions of the troopers.
He sighed a lot, if I remember.
He sighed apparently a few times. Actually, there's maybe one sigh on the videotape that's actually audible. I didn't see a lot of sighing on that video. It's interesting. We actually have a video which includes a good deal of that encounter, and on that video it does not appear, at least to me, that Mr. Figueroa appears extremely nervous. Characterizing the nervousness as extreme, I don't think would be correct. I think he was somewhat nervous in that encounter. But I don't think he was unreasonably so under the circumstances. The officers at that point knew that Mr. Figueroa was apparently not a speaker of English. They had identified him by this point as an undocumented alien. And those enough.
He lost his passport.
I can't speak to exactly how he came to be an illegal alien.
He was not legally in this country. Not that he was legally here, but he had lost his documents.
He apparently was not legally here in this country.
Right.
Yes. So at this point, the facts available are that he is an illegal alien. He does not speak the language. He's just been hailed to a stop, which the circuit has recognized before is something which naturally produces anxiety in ordinary individuals. So it would not be unreasonable under those circumstances for him to be somewhat nervous in this encounter with police, whether or not he was a drug courier. So there's no particular suspicion at all, I think, that comes from that those facts on their own. The second item was that Mr. Figueroa gave these apparently inconsistent accounts about who owned the vehicle. I don't actually know who owned the vehicle, but Mr. Figueroa, the officers or the troopers, believed that his account was inconsistent. What happened was Mr. Figueroa was first asked if he owned the vehicle, and he responded, see, yes, I do, by which I interpret him as meaning merely, yes, I haven't stolen this or anything. I'm authorized to use it. It's mine in the sense that I'm using it now, and I'm rightfully doing so. Asked to elaborate further, or asked again who owned the vehicle, he said first that it was his amigo, and then later he said it was his employer. I don't think there's any inconsistency in these remarks. I think what they evince is a person who, because of the difficulties in the language and the difficulties in the encounter, was trying to...
Well, yeah, but there's a big difference. I mean, the officer spoke Spanish, difference between my friend and my boss.
Well, your boss would be your friend. I mean, the officer, the trooper, did actually call out to him and say, amigo, por favor. I mean, so if he considered that if this term could be used for someone who he had just met, certainly it could be used to describe a boss. That's not inconsistent in my view. Actually, I see my time is up here, so.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay, thanks.
No. As I say, your time isn't up. You're eating into your rebuttal.
I'd like to save some of my time for rebuttal, though.
Okay.
So, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Gleichman.
Good morning. This was a case where Judge Hamilton generously granted the defendant a hearing on his motion to suppress when, quite honestly, the defendant did not establish that he had standing or, more accurately, a reasonable expectation of privacy in the pickup truck that he was driving, in the two electronically controlled hidden compartments, and specifically in the 10 kilograms of cocaine that were found inside those electronically controlled compartments.
Was the government able to determine who owned the truck?
No, sir. There's nothing in the record, and there was no evidence as to who the owner of the pickup truck was.
Did they make any effort to find out?
Not before the hearing on the motion to suppress. But I will say this, Your Honor. Judge Hamilton's decision in part from his remarks in ruling on the motion to suppress were predicated upon the fact that the defendant filed an affidavit with the court. The affidavit contained numerous material false statements in it. And the court might be aware that in the defendant's affidavit that he filed with the court in order to trigger the hearing on the motion to suppress, the defendant indicated that throughout the whole encounter with the police, they only spoke English to him.
Well, that's what got him an enhancement for obstruction of justice.
Yes, sir. That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. The defendant also claimed that the officers never told him he had a right to refuse the search, which was proven to be false, and Judge Hamilton found that to be false. In his affidavit, the defendant said that he consented to the search, but he did so because he was afraid that if he didn't, he would be held longer. Then the defendant came into court at the hearing and said, well, I never consented to the search. And then finally, the defendant in his affidavit indicated that the police told him that the reason for the stop was that he was going too slowly. And that was contradicted by the defendant himself at the hearing on the motion to suppress that indicated that he was told that he was following another vehicle too closely. So it was these false statements that led to the hearing on the motion to suppress in the first place. The defendant told Trooper Woldauer, who was the Spanish-speaking officer, that three different stories concerning who owned the truck. First, he said that he owned the truck. Then he claimed that his boss owned the truck. And then he claimed that a friend owned the truck. At no time did the defendant ever say that he borrowed the truck from its rightful owner. And I think that the defense reliance on Garcia in this case is somewhat flawed because in Garcia, the defendant in that case indicated that he borrowed the truck from an individual by the name of McClavio. And in that case, in the Garcia case, McClavio later reported that truck as being stolen, so there was evidence that he was the rightful owner of the truck. In this case, we don't have that. We have a defendant who was given ample opportunity to say who he got the truck from and just how he got to be in possession of that truck. And during cross-examination in the hearing of the motion to suppress, he indicated that he didn't know who he got the truck from. He just said, somebody, I don't know, said he didn't know the person's name, said he didn't know where the person lived. I don't believe that this is the type of situation in which this court would find that the defendant had a subjective expectation of privacy in the truck or one that, based on those facts, that society would recognize as being reasonable and legitimate. Further, there was no evidence, absolutely no evidence, that the defendant had any expectation of privacy in the hidden compartments, two hidden compartments, and the defendant never indicated that he had an expectation of privacy and any ownership in the 10 kilograms of cocaine. So I believe that based on the defendant's lack of standing or reasonable expectation of privacy, that the defendant's argument fails right there. If the court does find that the defendant did have standing, Judge Hamilton found that his consent was lawfully given, it was voluntarily given, there were no threats or promises or tricks made, and that the defendant was given his right to refuse the search of the truck, even though that's not constitutionally required. This all occurred after what is undisputed to be a lawful traffic stop. What the defense has mischaracterized as a second stop is nothing more than a police-citizen encounter. After the traffic stop was completed and Officer Woldauer...
I thought we determined he wasn't a citizen.
I'm sorry?
I thought we determined he wasn't a citizen.
Did I say citizen?
Yeah, you did.
I apologize. I used the wrong...
Police citizen.
After the traffic stop was concluded, he was not a citizen. You're absolutely right, Your Honor. After the traffic stop...
And I take it he hasn't become one since the stop.
I reckon not, Your Honor. I don't think that the Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement would look too favorably upon an application under these circumstances. But that notwithstanding, he was told that he could leave. Trooper Woldauer told him adios, buena suerte, goodbye, good luck. At that point, he walked back to the pickup truck that he was driving, and Officer Wade, for under 5 seconds, and what's more like 1 or 2 seconds, hit the horn on his car that activated a short whoop on the siren.
That'll get your attention, though.
It didn't get Mr. Figueroa Espana's attention, though. Judge Hamilton found that he did not react to that, and if the court views the videotape, he didn't even turn around. But he did turn around when Trooper Woldauer...
Because the horn was sounded in English.
It could be, Your Honor. I'm not an expert in translating the horns. But Trooper Roldaro called out to him, amigo, venga acá, por favor, tengo más preguntas, okay? Friend, I have some more questions. Come here, okay. And he did. He returned, and after again denying that there were drugs, guns, or big money in the car, he consented to the search of the pickup truck. And then finally, on the sentencing issue, Judge Hamilton imposed a sentence which was...
Did they indicate why they called him back?
I'm sorry?
Did they? The troopers indicate why they called him back?
Absolutely. Trooper Roldauer indicated that he wanted to see if he could obtain his consent to search that pickup truck.
Well, I mean, why did they decide at that point they wanted to search the truck?
I think it's reasonable to conclude that Trooper Roldauer after
ran the plates, right?
The conflicting stories, and based on that, determined that they wanted to search the pickup truck. I honestly don't know why he chose to do it that way, but he did. And just to finish up on the sentencing issue, this was a sentence that Judge Hamilton imposed of 176 months. It was within the advisory guidelines of 151 to 188 months. The defense in their brief has stated that Judge Hamilton imposed the sentence because the defendant filed a motion to suppress. That, just by way of editorial comment, puts a burr under my saddle, because appearing in front of Judge Hamilton for 10 years now, and anyone who knows Judge Hamilton knows not only didn't he do that in this case, but he would never do that. In fact, he bent over backwards for the defendant to give him the hearing in the first place. And what he said was, in total, the quote is that, and I quote, you made a very different decision in this case. You lied to the police. You moved to suppress the evidence. You lied about what happened then. You did so in your affidavit and in court. The result is your sentence is several years above the mandatory minimum sentence, but that's based on the choices that you made, end quote. So I think based on what happened, based on Judge Hamilton's comments, it's entirely reasonable to conclude that the fact that the defendant filed a motion to suppress had nothing to do with the 176-month sentence, which was within the advisory guideline range. Beyond that, I have nothing further. I thank you for your time, and I would ask you to affirm the judgments of the district court in this case. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Grass? You probably have about 60 seconds.
I wish I had a little more. First of all, with regard to Garcia, it's distinguished here on this point, and the state attempts to distinguish this on the basis of the fact that Mr. Garcia asked for or indicated that he had borrowed the truck. I think that the state has the burden of showing by preponderance that the truck was stolen. I think the mere fact that that there's this distinction in which one person was driving it, whereas the other person who drove it and said they borrowed it, I don't think is really as big a difference as they make it out to be. The other point I wanted to make very quickly is, and actually I have another point, which is, you know, the expectation of privacy in that vehicle is there for the protection of everyone. It doesn't matter if the person is someone who lies on affidavits or whatever else they do. This is something that, you know, the police have to abide by the rules, and, you know, the sort of defamation of my client is really not at the issue. With regard to the sentencing issue, which I can respond to.
It's a question of defamation.
Well, I chose my words poorly, I'm afraid, because I know I'm out of time. Actually, may I just make my last point very, very quickly? With regard to any aspersions against Judge Hamilton, whom I don't know, I think you look at this record, and there is an indication here where there is an aversion to the fact that the person, Mr. Figueroa, did contest the search. And I think you have to look at that raw record and what it indicates
right.
On the page.
We have your position. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.